Oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. William D. and Teresa L. Rousseau versus the Honorable W.G. Duff Woods, an original mandamus proceeding. Browning Ferris Incorporated versus Lewis and Stella Rena, doing business as Condor Industries from Bexar County. And James Jones versus Henry Valadez Jr. from Bexar County. In the second cause, 20 minutes will be allotted to each side to present oral arguments. In the first and third causes, 15 minutes. And the relators, or petitioners, will be allowed to save a portion of that time for rebuttal arguments by advising the marshal of our court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these arguments, and of course we'll complete the arguments before we take a noon break. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If anyone desires to listen to a tape of these arguments, you may make application with our clerk. The court is now ready to hear argument from relators in Rousseau versus Woods.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Countess will present argument to the relators. Relators have reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. I'm Dick Countess, and I represent Teresa Rousseau. Mr. William D. Rousseau, who is a pro se relator, is also present in the courtroom, but he will not present oral argument. In preparing for this argument, as I reviewed the briefs, I concluded that we don't give the court a great deal of help, either my briefs or the others. So let me see if I can focus directly on the problems that are involved in this case and suggest what I hope are the correct solutions. Two questions. Should the trial court be required to sign a final judgment? And is the receivership that is a part of this lawsuit void?
Could you also touch on the issue of standing, Mr. Accountant?
Yes, sir.
I think that's a very important issue.
All right. If you would like, I will address it.
Well, now. I think that needs to be addressed.
Yes. The standing issue is raised in connection with the bankruptcy of Mr. William Rousseau, and it is tendered as a defense, apparently a defense, either to the receivership argument or to the entry of judgment argument. In either case, it is a false issue, and here's why. In the exhibits before the court, you will find a series of orders. The first order is an order from the bankruptcy judge back in June 4 of 92, which are concurrent with a memorandum opinion denying turnover, concludes that the ownership of Casa T are of the corporate stock of Casa T, of the Canadian Corporation, is in dispute. And until that dispute is resolved by the state court, the bankruptcy court has no jurisdiction of and will not assume jurisdiction of the property in question. Now, that was in June. Later.
This is in 92?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It was in 92 after the case had been tried. The case was tried originally in May of 91.
And the issue is over the stock.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Seems kind of convoluted. Is it the stock of the Canadian Corporation that's an issue?
Yes, sir. I think it is.
Okay. That's certificate number 8 or whatever?
Yes, it's certificate number 8, and the corporation has a number that's its name also.
But
it is a very convoluted set of facts.
But it's that share, certificate number 8, that's in dispute.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Now, later, at another hearing, the bankruptcy court converted Mr. Rousseau's bankruptcy from a Chapter 11 to Chapter 7. But if you will look at the exhibit, you will see that it is under the same case number, that there is nothing setting aside the previous order refusing to take jurisdiction of this property until the state court action is concluded. And the reason is obvious. The bankruptcy court is not in the business of adjudicating title to state property or adjudicating disputes between folks who are arguing over who owns what. Of state property. That's not their job. They take what is a proven or accepted asset, and then they administer the estate accordingly. And that's where we are in this case. Until we get a final adjudication of Mr. Rousseau's interest, or his wife's interest, or Mr. Ranzu's interest, or some combination thereof, the bankruptcy court does not know what it is entitled to take, administer, and sell.
Okay. Does that mean that the trustee is the one who needs to go forward to determine the estate's interest in the property, or are you saying that by that bankruptcy court determination, the trustee has no authority to litigate the ownership of that stock.
I am saying the latter, and by an express order, the bankruptcy court declined to exercise jurisdiction over this property, and as a concluding sentence to its memorandum opinion, which is attached to my reply brief in this case, along with an order of June 4th, the bankruptcy court says this: after reviewing the law and the evidence, the court concludes that the Cassatee House should not be turned over to the bankruptcy court until the state district court determines the ownership of the property.
When an individual files a Chapter 7, are there any assets of that individual that do not go to the trustee?
I'm certainly not an expert on bankruptcy, but my understanding is that the exempt assets, homestead, that sort of thing, are not handled by the trustee. But beyond that, normally, yes, all of the assets that are unexempt would go to the trustee. However, as I said, we have a specific order. In this case, it's the same case number, prior to it becoming a Chapter 7, that where the court declined to exercise jurisdiction. It has done nothing since that time to assume jurisdiction of this property. It has given no indication that it wants to get involved in this fight until the state court resolves who owns what.
Real parties in interest argue that Mr. Brousseau entered into an agreement with Ranzau to convey his interest to the FDIC, and thereafter that agreement also included an agreement that the receiver could exercise the option, which Ranzau argues has in fact been exercised on July the 19th, 1990. Can you explain the relationship of this 1992 bankruptcy order to that? I mean, is the effect of that agreed order in controversy?
I think I'll try to answer your question. I'm going to have to work at it a little bit to get around to it.
I can understand why.
Because not only of the convoluted facts, but because of less than precise legal activity that's occurred throughout this case. And let me take the last refuge of an appellate attorney. I'm late to the case, and I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I have. The case started in 89 when Ranzau sued Brousseau, alleging a business deal that had gone bad and trying to claim certain interest in the stock of this Canadian corporation. There was a long period there when the FDIC got involved, the bank failed, we went through it. I was not involved. A number of things occurred, but eventually Brousseau reached a settlement with the FDIC that granted him the option to purchase the stock of the Canadian corporation, the stock certificate number 8. Now, there were also some quit claims exchanged as to the Mexican property itself, Cassatee, but the effect of those is nil because the property was never owned. Well, it was not owned in such a way that it could be quit claimed in that manner. But in any event, Brousseau had the option to purchase. Then, because of the lawsuit, he and Ranzau agreed that the option could be exercised by Jay Arnold, who had been appointed receiver early in this, and that Arnold would, if they gave him the money, exercise the option and purchase the property.
This is the same receivership which your client now alleges is void?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And that's a different problem. If I may finish this, then I'll come right to that also. They gave him the money. He purchased the stock certificate, paid the FDIC, got possession of the stock certificate. Now, up to that point, we really have no quarrel with what was going on because, obviously, until this lawsuit's resolved, we want everything held intact so we know who owns what. And so we know that it'll be there if we win when the lawsuit's over. Now, here's the jurisdictional problem. What Mr. Brousseau agreed to, and you can see it in the exhibits, is that this option would be exercised and the stock would be held by Jay Arnold until this thing is resolved. But what has happened is that the court has gone far beyond what was an agreement and has appointed a receiver over a corporation that is not a Texas corporation, that has no assets in Texas, and a corporation that has only an asset in the country of Mexico. So we have a situation that's technically or legally impossible because the receiver cannot go to either of those countries under that state court authority and do anything. That's not going to be recognized.
At this point, is there still a hearing that you're seeking that you can't get?
We have filed a motion for reconsideration. I have no illusions personally about what the outcome of that motion will be. What we really want is a final judgment so we can appeal this case and get a lot of very tough issues resolved. And I think it's a slammed up reversal, but I thought that before and been wrong. But we want that, and we think this receivership is void because there was no corporate asset in the state of Texas.
Well, I understand the merits. My concern is whether or not this is a catch-22 situation where we can't seem to get this in a form that it can be reviewed by someone. Have you requested a hearing on your motion for reconsideration that you can't get set?
Yes, I think the exhibits will indicate that the judge has written counsel and said he's not going to hold a hearing on that motion. That's my understanding. I will double-check that during my time.
And what specific relief are you asking with reference to that?
Well, we are asking that the judge be ordered to hold a hearing on it. But
is there, let me again ask you to pause there before we get back into the merits. Are you asking this court to do anything in this mandamus other than direct the judge to hold the hearing of your motion for reconsideration?
Yes, Your Honor. We would also ask that the judge be directed to render a final judgment in this case so we can appeal it on the merits. And until we can do that, most of these other problems are simply going to remain unresolved.
Griffin and Griffin, the intervenor, says that their claims have not yet been resolved. And how can we mandamus the trial judge to enter a final judgment when their interventions have yet to be either severed out or otherwise?
This court's jurisdiction in that regard is to require a judge to proceed to judgment. The letter of the judge resolving various issues at the end of the trial said, as to Griffin and Griffin, the court will withhold ruling on intervener's intervention and other relief requested by plaintiff pending formal report from the receiver. Now, that was in June 18 of 1991. The court is still withholding ruling, meaning it's heard the evidence and it's ready for a ruling. It simply has not done it. So, again, our request is that the judge be ordered to proceed to judgment, to proceed to a final appealable judgment so we can get an appellate review of these problems.
Is that purely a ministerial act?
Yes, I think it is, Your Honor. At this point, and we're not asking you to tell him how to render judgment, obviously. We're just asking you to say, it's been 2 years, go ahead and render a judgment.
Can he grant a new trial?
Yes, he can. It's still within his plenary power.
So is it a useless act for us to order the judge to render judgment when he can, the next moment, grant a new trial under the rules of civil procedure?
I would not think so, Your Honor, because I think that power exists anytime you order a judge to render a judgment. There's always a 30-day time frame on there once the judge is signed.
And without, as far as the adequacy of remedies by appeal that you have to address any of these problems, you can't appeal it until you've got a final judgment.
That is correct. Now, an interlocutory appeal could have been taken from the order appointing the receiver. It was not taken. There is nothing that requires an appeal like that, and no waiver to be placed.
Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honor. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I take the floor, Mr. Richard Fuquay, with
an argument from respondent. Good morning. I'm here on behalf of Dennis Ramsau, one of the investor with Mr. Rosso in the house in Mexico. Judge, I want to take your standing question first, because I am a bankruptcy lawyer. I think this is my first appearance before this august court. I've been to Washington a few times. But standing is totally a problem for the realtors. And the reason is Section 541 of the Bankruptcy Code creates, 11 United States Code 541, creates the concept of property of the estate. And Judge, all assets that a debtor has in a Chapter 11 or in a Chapter 7 are administered in a bankruptcy case, regardless. The only time exempt assets are carved out is after the first meeting of creditors. A trustee has the ability to set aside, pursuant to the United States Code 522 or the exemption statute we have in Texas, because we're an elect and statute state, the property that is deemed by him to be exempt. And that's, of course, appealable. But all assets, that's a change of concept. The Bankruptcy Act was written so that exempt assets never passed through a state. They do now and have since the bankruptcy code was offered. The asset that Mr. Brosseau seeks to enforce before you is an asset he has no title to at all by operation of law. 11 United States Code, Section 541 says that is property of the estate. The reference to the bankruptcy judge in Tyler's order is an accurate order. I argued the case before that bankruptcy judge. In bankruptcy, we have what is a concept of the single entity theory, which is if you were to be in a proceeding, your assets would be then administered in the bankruptcy court. If a company of yours, corporation, was to be administered, you're not in bankruptcy because your assets aren't in bankruptcy, the corporation's. That entity's assets are. A partnership can go into bankruptcy. A bankruptcy judge can order you to put your financial statement up and enjoin you from transferring your assets during the pendency of the partnership bankruptcy. That, of course, wasn't what occurred here. Mr. Brosseau sought relief in the bankruptcy court so he didn't have to go to trial. I mean, we're getting ready to go to trial, and he dives into Chapter 11. Before that, he put his other corporation, Arbus, into Chapter 11.
Is that still pending? Is he still in bankruptcy?
Mr. Brosseau is in Chapter 7. I guess Argos is technically in bankruptcy. A corporation cannot, under the bankruptcy code, cannot receive a discharge, Your Honor. Therefore, it just goes on into perpetuity. The assets are liquidated. Mr. Brosseau's bankruptcy estate is a Chapter 7 estate. It will continue on until he is discharged. I do not know if he's received a discharge. Or until the case is closed. If he receives a discharge, it will be closed as to him. If he doesn't, he still has all the same debts. But the assets, by federal law, transfer to the receiver, or the receiver is in this case, the bankruptcy trustee who's charged with administering has taken an oath to do that. The reason the bankruptcy judge, well, first of all, Mr. Brosseau and his lawyers had the opportunity to remove, or to attempt to remove this case to the bankruptcy court from Liberty. They never did that. In fact, the order that's entered was Mr. Brosseau's lawyers at that time filed a contempt action against my client and myself for the order that Judge Wood did it in Liberty County. So we journeyed to Plano and conducted a trial. We weren't given notice of it, but we made it there to find out. And conducted the trial in front of the bankruptcy judge. He said, I want to wait and find out if there's a partnership here. All I'm entitled to in the bankruptcy estate is what Brosseau's part of that partnership the court in Liberty says he has. And that's the meat of the coconut on that issue. The bankruptcy trustee is the real party in interest because he's the guy that should be before you if he had an argument to make saying, this is affecting my property, my assets. Mr. Brosseau is, by law, totally divested. The next issue is Mrs. Brosseau. I think from their pleadings, it's clear that, although we've never seen any document of transfer between Mr. and Mrs. Brosseau, it's clear that Mrs. Brosseau provided the dollars by their testimony. We've not seen anything prove that, nor has any evidence ever been introduced to support that. Only Mr. Brosseau testified. The money came pursuant to Mr. Brosseau's instructions from Mrs. Brosseau. If Mrs. Brosseau has a claim, her claim is to be exercised in the bankruptcy court because the bankruptcy court took title to those funds. The funds that were wired in that would have gone for the benefit of Bill Brosseau would have been property of his bankruptcy estate. She could only have rights through him unless, you know, the strangeness of this case, Your Honors, is that there was an agreed order entered by Mr. Brosseau in the Liberty case, saying, you know, we want you to be the receiver, we want you to hold the stock, and we're going to conduct this trial. And also, Mr. Receiver, we're going to convey the money to you so that you can exercise the option that Mr. Brosseau had. Not Mrs. Brosseau, Mr. Brosseau had. In the state court trial case. The next thing we heard for the first time, frankly, was Mrs. Brosseau claimed that she had title to that, which meant her husband was signing false oaths and false agreements before a state district judge, because he's the one that warrants that he's conveying all of his rights in. I don't know which, it's like the old, when was the first lie issue? I mean, the representations of Mr. Brosseau have been inaccurate from day one in this case.
Well, let me ask just about one of them, and that is, as far as this motion for reconsideration,
yes, sir.
That they say they want us to mandamus trial court to do something about it. Do you object to that, to hearing on the motion for reconsideration?
I don't object to final order, Judge. My problem is I'm unaware of the letters that counsel is talking to you about, where the trial judge has written him a letter saying he's not going to conduct a hearing. I don't have a copy of that.
But you have, it's obvious that this is very intricate litigation and difficult to follow all of it. But as far as the relief sought of a motion for reconsideration to be heard and a final judgment to be entered, are you objecting to that?
I'm not objecting to a final judgment in any respect. I'd like to have Griffin and Griffin's issue dealt with. They would too.
If both of you feel that way, why isn't this being taken care of at some level other than the Texas Supreme Court?
At police court, we take the position we've tried it and have our judgment. We believe that Griffin and Griffin have to be dealt with. I don't have the ability to instruct a trial court to make a ruling on anything, and I'm not so presumptuous to think I have that in any court law.
What reasons has Judge Wood given you for not proceeding?
No, sir.
None?
No, sir. The position that he took after the trial was he ruled that there was a partnership, that we'd been damaged significantly. We were entitled to our cost and our recovery. But he did not rule that day on the Griffin and Griffin intervention. They have had a longstanding judgment against Mr. Brosseau and claim an interest that would be a competing interest with the bankruptcy trustee's interest, in my view. But nonetheless, that was not addressed. Additionally, the court wanted to have the receiver continue to, I guess, operate or manage the property or get it into a better shape or form. That was one of the concerns he had. He put that in his interlocutory judgment.
Yeah, but isn't the receiver still there?
Yes, sir,
we
have
a discharged receiver.
No, sir, he's still
there.
We're
not paying funds from the court. Nothing's been distributed.
That is correct, sir.
Well, you paid a lot of money, but the question is, how do you render a judgment when the receiver has apparently some instructions to sell the property and the property hasn't been sold yet? I mean, how do you render now a judgment?
I don't frankly oppose the receiver's. I'm not opposed to the receiver selling the property. I mean, I'd like to get to cash, but because we've been held up. We're the ones that have had to effectively pay all the costs and expenses for the receivership. But whenever the receiver got sued by Mr. Brosseau in Dallas, he asked Judge Wood to let him have money out of the receivership so that he could defend himself. The judge ordered Officer Brosseau and us to pay. Well, we didn't have a lot of choice there.
As long as the receiver is advertising the property and trying to sell it, can the trial court enter a final judgment until that sale is consummated and the proceeds paid into the registry of the court or by some appropriate procedure and then dispersed according to the court's final order?
Your Honor, I've not contemplated that. That may well be correct.
And what's your response to Mr. Countess's argument that this is a void order because it orders a receiver to take jurisdiction over a foreign corporation?
There are three responses to that. When the case was filed initially, under 704, a trial judge can appoint a receiver over assets in that county or in the state of Texas. The stock certificate was clearly in Liberty, Texas. That's why we picked that focal point.
But does the order appointing the receiver authorize the receiver to take jurisdiction over the corporation or over the stock certificate?
Both. I would candidly tell you it's a broader order. But I believe that problem is eliminated, and let me tell you why, sir. The FDIC, we tried this case, we tried to move forward on it. The FDIC closed the bank in Liberty. The case was then removed under the mandatory docket to Judge Fisher's courtroom, the United States District Judge in Beaumont. Judge Fisher appointed Arnold, the receiver, in his court as well. And it's one of the transactions we have attached as an exhibit to our pleading, sir. In addition to appointing him the receiver, which under the federal powers, I'm not aware that there's a jurisdictional issue at all in that problem. That's kind of law of practice all my life. I think when he's appointed by Judge Fisher, he titled anything anywhere under the federal statutes. But going another step further, Your Honor, what happened is Mr. Brasseau, unknown to Mr. Ranzau, contracted with the FDIC as a settlement, partial settlement in the federal district court litigation, that 80451, wholly the Canadian Corporation, Mr. Brasseau, and Argos, Mr. Brasseau's company, all conveyed to the FDIC all right, title, and interest they had into the stock certificate and to Canadian Corporation had in this asset that's located in Mexico. They then contracted with the FDIC for Mr. Brasseau to have an opportunity to purchase for $600,000 those assets within a time certain. Judge Fisher also conducted a judicial foreclosure of the federal court on those assets. So, to my understanding, there were no claims yet remaining against the certificate or the house. And also by contract, Brasseau and Ranzau contracted for the state court receiver to take the quitclaim deed to the stock and the house, as well as part of the continuing litigation when we got back to state court. So clearly, Arnold and the court are entitled, that judge is entitled to appoint a receiver for that stock certificate. I don't believe you can contract jurisdiction, so I've not argued that, but clearly there's jurisdiction over that certificate.
When did Mr. Brasseau or Mrs. Brasseau first object to the order that would ostensibly give the receiver power over this foreign corporation?
It may have been 1991.
So the receiver was appointed on April the 21st, 1989, and the first objection they made was in 1991?
Yes, sir.
And the mandamus proceeding is here we are in 1993.
That's correct.
Is there any reason for the delay that you've aware
of? The bankruptcy, inherent with the system, when a bankruptcy is filed, there will be a delay in any state court litigation. And that just, it's just, it comes to pass. We've tried very carefully not to offend the jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court, and when we were called to task, the bankruptcy court said we had not offended his jurisdiction with the way we were trying to proceed in Liberty County. The only parties in interest, I'd say it again, but it's the United States trustee that's supposed to be here, not Mr. and Ms. Brasseau. Clearly not Mr. Brasseau in any respect. And I can't find a good argument for her. I've not seen anything that gives her title or an interest in any of these, in this asset or in this stock. Yeah, I was just sitting thinking, collecting my thoughts, Your Honor. I believe that clearly the judge in Liberty has the ability to liquidate, to order that receiver to liquidate whatever the contracted for race is. I can't tell if that's one of their objections or not, but I think there's clear authority for that.
Is there any allegations at any level of any fraud or collusion or dishonesty of the judges here in this case?
Your Honor, there was a motion to recuse that was filed by Mr. Brasseau alleging that Jay Arnold, the local counsel for Mr. Ranzau, had represented Judge Wood in his divorce sometime past. Other than that, I'm not aware of any. And I know that there was a letter or a complaint to the Judicial Qualifications Committee, but I believe it was declined. I don't know that.
If there are no pending issues,
I'm not aware of any, sir. Thank you for your time.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I want to address three things.
Mr. Cannell, with regards to collusion, is there any collusion or any allegations on your part that this judge is doing the best he can under the circumstances or that he's a part of some conspiracy against your client?
No, Your Honor. We think he's made a number of legal errors, but there is no, we're not alleging publicly of any evil or wrongdoing of the kind you're asking about.
And Mr. Countess, let me, I'm sorry to sort of divert you, but let me just, this is a concern. In the last term, Justice Spector wrote an opinion for the unanimous court declining to issue the writ of mandamus where there was an unexplained delay in seeking the writ. Can you tell us why that doesn't control this case?
Well, it doesn't control because if you apply it in this situation, then we can never get a final appealable judgment. We're simply locked in to a judge who can sit on this case forever and never get reversed.
You've got to wait long enough to ask.
I'm sorry?
You've got to wait long enough to ask.
That's correct, Your Honor. The situation, as I recall the case, and it's been a while since I read it, but it had to do with a discovery fight or something occurred prior to the time that the case was tried. And Your Honor said, you know, it happened 4 months ago, don't come running to us now with a problem. You should have said something back then. Within that context, I understand that result. But here we're locked into a situation where we can't get a judgment. We can't appeal. We've had the rights determined of these folks. We've had a big judgment ordered against Mr. Brousseau. We've had Mrs. Brousseau's interests denied. And we can't do anything about it. We're just sitting there.
You could have, your client, I should say, perhaps before you got involved, could have appealed the appointment of the receiver on an interlocutory basis.
Why doesn't that supply
you with an adequate remedy at law?
It supplies a remedy only as to the receiver, but remember, there's a great deal more involved here. This case was tried and a big judgment was rendered against Brousseau. A partnership determination was made that he denies. Ms. Brousseau's interest in the property was denied. Things of that nature were litigated and resolved against my clients, and we can't get a review even of that because of this situation. So even if we had appealed the interlocutory appeal on the receiver, we would still have that problem that needs to be reviewed.
If you have a receiver, I mean, there is currently a receiver operating under court instructions today.
Yes, sir.
And the receiver has not accomplished whatever it is the trial court's instruction. It appears from what I see here that the receiver has some sort of instruction to sell the property. The property hasn't been sold. How, even if we issued an order to proceed to judgment, I think that's the language used, to proceed to judgment, how do we enforce that order if you've got a receiver that hasn't finished the task?
Well, that gets to part of the problem. We don't want that property sold, and we're trying to keep it from being sold because we think it should not be sold. We think it's going to be sold at a sacrifice and a loss. So we've got a two-pronged problem. We've got a receivership we think is void.
But that's a receivership that you agree with.
We agreed that Jay Arnold could hold this property, and we called him a receiver, could hold this stock certificate until this matter could be resolved. But now the order appointing the receiver directs the receiver to take charge of the corporation described above together with its assets. There is no authority in Texas for that. Opposing counsel said, well, the stock certificate is in Liberty County. The stock certificate is not a corporate asset. The stock certificate belongs to Renzo or Russo or some combination thereof. It is not a corporate asset. There is no corporate asset in the state of Texas. None. So there is no law in our state that permits the receiver to take control of the corporation. It simply is a void order in that regard.
Very briefly, Judge, what three things did you want to tell us when you began?
See if I can remember them.
Yeah.
First, I would, opposing counsel said a lot of things that I don't think the record supports. I know this court will simply check the record and make its decision based on what's before it. I think the other two points I have managed to cover in my response as well. Let me just say this. I don't understand where we go with this trustee, bankruptcy trustee argument. The district court in Liberty County is continuing to function. There's been no stay ordered. There's been nothing done to keep the trustee and the receiver from dealing with this property. There's been nothing done by the trustee in bankruptcy to take control of the property. We're simply sitting there with a situation where opposing counsel is saying, well, we've got this trustee in bankruptcy, and so we can't do anything. Well, they're doing things. The judge is doing things. And we're sitting there with a judgment that we can't get, and we can't appeal the case. The last order of the bankruptcy court about this property declines to exercise jurisdiction. There has been no order since then assuming jurisdiction of the property. And I think we can assume from that it does not want jurisdiction of it until this case is over.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will now take a brief recess.
Please rise.